Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie. My name is Patrick Bromley and I'm joined tonight for a discussion of Oz the Great and Powerful by the great and powerful Adam Riske.
Damn right. Thanks for noticing.
I was going to say your first time on the podcast, but not your first time on the podcast because you were on the F This Movie Fest show.
I was. I'm here to redeem myself, so thank you for the opportunity.
Remember, you can always find all of our past episodes at fthismovie.net. You can find us in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/fthismovie. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie and email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. I'm thinking about moving all that stuff to the end of each episode. I think people are a little tired of it up front. Maybe I should end the show now with all of our contact info.
As an F This Movie fan as well, I think you're worrying about it too much. You're good.
It's possible.
You're good.
I like to fret
it.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm. You feel the fret.
I do.
Through the internet.
So before we pay some attention to the man behind the curtain, Adam Riske, have you seen anything good lately?
I have seen a few things good lately, but I'd like to do my part as giving a public service announcement of warning people against a couple movies that are in theaters right now.
Just as good.
21 and Over. I saw that, and I'd like to kind of walk you through the steps of how I ended up in the theater for 21 and Over, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I was going to go see Snitch, and that was
which I also question, but
Snitch.
Okay.
Okay. So I go to movies after work. I go to movies after work a lot.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, well, I got Snitch. I guess I could go see Snitch. So I went to that. And it was like a 5:50 show, and I get there, and I'm all ready to go see Snitch. And then there's like a group of douchey teenagers in front of me. And I was just like, oh no, what if they're going to see Snitch? But then I remembered 21 and Over came out this weekend. So I'm like, no, they're going to go see 21 and Over. So then they were like, yeah, one for Snitch. And I was like, oh no. So I had a choice. Do I go see Snitch or do I go see something else? And the only thing that's starting at the same time was 21 and Over. So the words one for 21 and Over fell out of my mouth.
So it's like, do I go see a movie with douchebags in the theater or do I go see a movie with douchebags on the screen?
I made the wrong choice. So I saw the douchebags on the screen. It was kind of like in the movie Matinee when John Goodman says, you know, they tear your ticket, it's too late to turn back now. So it was kind of like that. So I walked into the theater and I was like, all right, 21 and Over, what do you got for me?
Yeah.
And then I sit down and I'm watching this movie and it's completely terrible, which is probably not a surprise, but I think that the National Film Registry should keep this one and Project X as proof of the worst generation.
Yeah.
Because if this is what I'm going to be, like, if these people are eventually going to be working at the same office that I am one day, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, it's a movie that thinks, like, being Asian and existing is a punchline. It is
for Marcon.
Well, yeah. I need to use more of that. I've been sitting on
I saw the trailer once and I just thought it was the same. And I didn't see Project X, but it really looked like the same exact movie to me.
It really does. I mean, the good thing is, have you seen Road Trip?
I have.
It makes Road Trip, like, look like a masterpiece.
Okay.
And I liked Road Trip.
Yeah, I liked Road Trip, yeah.
And I'm wondering if Road Trip is a lot better than people gave it credit for.
It might be.
Or if 21 and Over is just a lot worse than Road Trip.
I bet if you watched Road Trip right now, it would seem, like, sort of sweet and quaint.
Yeah.
Because it lacks all the hate of, like, the new teen movies.
Yeah,
they're so date rapey, they seem like.
This one was very
maybe just rapey. Not even date rapey. Because
yeah.
These guys can't get dates, right? So it's just, like, rape rapey.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, ooh, gross. Yeah, it's just bad. It's just bad news.
Did you laugh at all?
I laughed a couple times, but
they
got one thing right, which is, maybe it's just me and how my friends talk, but you'll be in the middle of something, like a, you know, some hijinks or something,
sure.
And then you will drop, like, a pop culture reference that's got no relation to anything.
Yeah.
So they have one about Joseph Gordon-Levitt that was really funny.
Did the other characters then call attention to it?
Not really. Like, they just kind of glazed over it. They had one where somebody said something, and they're like, this is just like Cameron Diaz. And then the other guy's like, well, I really liked her in Shrek. And he's just like, well, that's just because Shrek is a good movie. And then they just moved on. And all it was right. just kind of like, all right. Well, that's at least
I don't know if
something.
I agree with their opinions on Shrek, yeah. but sure.
And why call out Cameron Diaz in
yeah,
Shrek?
Yeah, right?
I mean,
she was the best part of the, no. it always makes me crazy yeah. when a movie will make like a solid reference to something. And I'm like, hey, good for you. And then they're so worried that the audience might not get it.
Yeah.
One of the other characters is like, oh, yeah, I saw that, blah, blah, blah. And then he mentions what they're referencing. That just bothers me. Like, don't
yeah.
give me credit and then immediately afterwards insult my intelligence.
Yes, I completely agree with you. They kind of do that in this movie. But in the moment, it made me smile.
Was there anyone in the theater who was 21 and under?
Sure, yeah, there's a few. I mean, I didn't go late at night, so it wasn't
like... Was this like opening day?
It was opening day.
Oh, that's
it wasn't
amazing.
Like, it wasn't like primetime douche crowd,
right.
so it was just, you know, the people who really, like, needed to see it right away, like,
yeah.
who couldn't even wait for their friend for Friday night. Like, so I saw it with the devotees.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, but, so I saw that.
All
I
right.
saw it. And the other movie to warn people against is Dead Man Down.
Oh, okay.
Which makes me sad because you and I were talking over email that it had kind of a kick-ass trailer.
Yeah. Like, I never would have paid attention to a movie called Dead Man Down. And
yeah.
then every time I'd see the trailer, I'm like, that actually looks kind of good.
Well, first off, okay, like, Dead Man Down, even if you watch the movie, the title doesn't make any sense.
No.
At all.
I can't believe that.
So, it was very disappointing. I was like, that was part of, like, the draw, where I'm just like, oh, God, this movie's not working, but at least I'll find out what Dead Man Down
How are they going to talk their way out of this
like,
one?
Like, how are they going to
yeah.
do that? And then, like, in the trailer, they go out of their way to say, like, from the maker of the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh, yeah, the
it's
good
like,
one.
You know,
the,
it's like, good. It's like, it's fine, all right.
Yeah, it's in another language.
They should just put, you know, the one that's fine. And instead of, because that means absolutely nothing to, like,
right.
a Friday night mainstream movie crowd.
Right.
They should have just said stuff, like, from the makers of, like, Alive Woman Up or, like, Coma Dog Sideways or something. Because it makes absolutely no difference whatsoever.
Yeah, I don't know if that's bringing in a huge audience for Dead Man Down. But
no. I would see Coma Dog Sideways, though.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
I think it's good. But, okay, so, like... If you like, all right, so Patrick, you write heavy action.
Yes.
Do you like movies about revenge that have a lot of action in them?
I do.
Do you like movies that are action-packed?
I do.
Then you would like this movie in the first 10 minutes and the last 10 minutes because all the action is packed in those two parts. And in the
Perfect.
Middle is...
That sounds like a kick-ass 20 minutes.
Yes, it's great. And then in the middle of it is your classic Euro slow burn. The type of movie where...
You mean the kind of slow burn found in the original Girl with the Dragon Tattoo?
You know it. And it's just like, do I want to see this revenge or do I want to see some conversations about revenge? And it's like, this is the worst. And, okay, this might...
But it makes the last 10 minutes so much better because, like, they really earn this by talking about it
I
for
know,
80 minutes.
But they don't! And then, like, Noomi Rapace is in it, and I feel like I've got the necessary sample size now to make my opinion about Noomi Rapace.
Yeah.
And, okay, like, in this movie, like, people, like, hate her in this movie. There's, like...
Characters or, like,
characters.
People who see... Okay.
Characters. Like, she'll walk out of her apartment building, and then there's children throwing rocks at her and
do you think
calling
it's
her a monster.
Do you think it's because of Prometheus?
Probably. Yeah. I think it's gotta be that. But it's just, like, I only want to see her in a movie now, like, where she's having, like, her best day. Like, I just am done with, like, torture Noomi Rapace.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, and then, all right. So they talk about revenge a lot in this movie, and then, but, like, the rest of it, it's all, like, European guys in tracksuits, and, like, I'm tired of seeing in my goddamn action movies European tracksuits and freaking plutonium and uranium and stuff. Like, if I
Is
see...
Is it weapons grade? Because that's very important.
Oh, yeah, Jack Courtney.
As opposed to any other kind of
yeah.
plutonium.
Yeah, it's just, like, dormant...
This is consumer-grade plutonium, and then this is weapons grade.
It's like, they bought a bunch of clearance plutonium.
I did not know there was plutonium in Dead Man Down.
I don't know. And there's a lot of eating in Dead Man Down.
Really?
Yeah, I have become...
You're really selling me on this movie.
Okay, because of my column for F This Movie, I have become hyper-attuned to critical things now mm-hmm. that I was not paying attention to before. And I noticed that everybody in this movie, like, if you wanted to know in the course of the revenge, what they ate at every meal, you will find out during Dead Man Down, because they're talking about eating cookies and bringing, not just eating cookies, but like bringing back the Tupperware from the cookies that somebody gave them to eat. Stuff about like,
is that what they're getting revenge for? Like, you never brought me back my Gladware.
Pretty much. They even comment on that. They even comment on it. They've got shit like, they're sitting at a table and it's like, are you sure you don't want this leftover lemon chicken for lunch? And it's just like, there's even a part where like one of Terrence Howard's henchmen's like, he's like, gives this big threatening speech. And then he, at the end of the scene, he's like, sit down. Oh, thanks for bringing me my dinner. And it's like a freaking container of plastic, like a sandwich and pickle and stuff like that. It's like, what is this?
Could they have just been improvising the whole middle section?
I don't know.
What I'm saying that's disappointing.
It was not that good to watch and view.
All right.
But I went to the Sci-Fi Spectacular at the venerable, is that a word?
It is a word.
Fancy Portage Theater in Chicago yesterday, and I didn't stay for, it was 24 hours this year, I didn't stay for much of it, but I got a few things to recommend.
Okay. It used to only be like, for those of you listening, this is the same group that puts on The Massacre that we do the show on every year, and it used to be the Sci-Fi Spectacular would happen in the spring, and it's like 12 to 14 hours. This year they did 24 for the first time, because God knows it's so much fun at The Massacre to do 24 hours, so let's make that happen again.
Yeah, it was, I was thinking, like, it would be the worst, like, you were there type of column, because it would just be basically, like, a picture of me with a revolver going closer to my head.
4 a.m., I hate,
I hate myself.
Alright, so what did you see at the Sci-Fi Spectacular?
Alright, so they didn't do the usual trailer block at the beginning, which was kind of disappointing, but I'm going to recommend to you, they played a Disney cartoon that was called the Disney Haunted Halloween Education Documentary, and you can find it on YouTube, and you should definitely do that, because it's the beginning of pregame for Scary Movie Month! It was really good. But cool. So you should watch that. And then some of the highlights were, saw a matinee in a theater full of an appreciative audience, which was great. And I never saw it in a theater in its original release, so that was great. And Soylent Green was very good. And
I've never seen Soylent Green.
You should check it out. It's one of the ugliest movies to look at.
Really? But I feel like it's too late now, because the whole movie is the twist, right? Like,
no, actually, I'm glad you brought that up. It is a movie that is so good that it is good even if you know the twist.
Okay.
I knew the twist, but I love it when a movie can stand up to it not just being a twist movie, even though it's dependent on one. And it's really just, you get involved with the story, and the performances are good, and it's not hammy and things like that.
It's not hammy? Charlton Heston, is it?
Not really.
Wow.
He's pretty contained. I mean, there's definitely like some, you know, Roger Moore 70s Bond going on some of it, but, like, it's not too bad.
Now, it being Soylent Green, do a lot of characters talk about what they're eating and, like, thanks for bringing me my dinner, that kind of thing? Was this a theme for the weekend, I guess, is what I'm saying.
No, I ate a box of fruit roll-ups, though, and I was ready to cry after it was over. Never eat a variety pack of 16 fruit roll-ups by yourself. Dead man down. And then, so Soylent Green was good, and then I saw In the Mouth of Madness again, and it's not a sci-fi movie, so I don't know, it's more like science fact, but that's an underrated movie.
It is an underrated movie. It's a horror movie. Yeah. I mean, it's not science fiction at all.
It's clearly a horror movie.
I think it's John Carpenter's last good movie.
Yeah,
because one of his most underrated, I think.
Because what did he have after that? Like
Vampires?
Yeah.
Is that really Mars? Ghost of Mars and that
Award.
Terrible one, yeah. Wow, yeah. I guess I thought there were more. Oh, Village of the Damned, although that might have come out the same year.
I didn't see that one.
It's not good.
No.
But yeah, I like In the Mouth of Madness.
Yeah, I was a fan of it. It's the thing I liked about it was that Sam Neill's character acts like how a normal person in that situation would act.
Right.
He's like completely baffled and then pissed off and mad, and it's, yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's worth a watch.
And it's willing to go, like, pretty crazy, which I always like.
Yeah, they definitely had cocaine at the craft service table.
What a movie.
So that was good.
What a movie's willing to go a little nutty.
Yeah, it was good stuff. So that's what I've been watching. How about you?
While you were at the Sci-Fi Spectacular, woo-hoo, at the Portage Theater in Chicago, I went to the Patio Theater in Chicago for the Triple Threat film festival featuring the films of Albert Pyun. And if you don't know Albert Pyun, he's sort of like the 80s and 90s equivalent of Roger Corman. He's made like over 50 movies. Most of them went straight to video. Not a lot of them are very good, but I have definite affection for a lot of his movies. So he was there in person and showed the director's cut of Cyborg, which came out in like 88 with Van Damme. That was the first Van Damme movie I ever saw. And I might write about this, so I won't spend a lot of time on it. But he got kicked off the movie immediately after shooting it. Both he and the editor got kicked off, and they reshot a bunch of stuff, and the movie that came out was very different than the movie that he had tried to make. So he showed the director's cut, and it was shown off a DVD, and it was a work print, so it didn't look great. But it was interesting as a contrast. There's a lot of things about it that I actually liked better than the released version of Cyborg. The second movie was supposed to be Nemesis, which I had never seen. Luckily, I have rectified that.
Who's in Nemesis? Is
that
like a Dolph movie?
No, nobody huge. Okay. The lead actor is this French guy named Olivier Grunier or something like that. But Tim Thomerson and Brian James are in it. And they're in every...
Olivier Grunier is kind of huge.
Like right? Size-wise or like super famous?
Yeah, super famous.
So, yeah, he's pretty super famous. Yeah, yeah. So I didn't see it at the Triple Threat, but I did come home and watch it. Instead, I saw Road to Hell, which is Albert Pyun's new movie. And I was curious about it because it is an unauthorized, unofficial sequel to Streets of Fire, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. And it hurts me to say I did not like it at all. Because as much as I thought, like, oh, wow, this is going to be this whole love letter to Streets of Fire, instead, the movie takes a bunch of characters that you love and then imagines a future that is so different than what you would have ever hoped for. It takes Michael Pare is in the movie, and it takes Tom Cody, who in the original Streets of Fire is this sort of brooding, romantic sort of anti-hero guy, but a good guy. And turns him into, like, a raping, murdering woman beater. And that was never the future I saw for him.
Yeah.
It kills off a lot of characters from Streets of Fire just through casual conversation. Like, so, and sometimes like, text crawls.
It's like Alien 3 beginning.
Kind of, yeah. For, like, a whole movie, it kind of just dumps on this thing that I love. So that made me...
Was there music in it?
Lots of music. Wall-to-wall music, to the point where the first third and the last third are nothing but, like, uninterrupted performances of songs.
And I'm guessing the music wasn't music that you like, otherwise you probably would have had a better time.
It was okay. They used two of the songs from Streets of Fire, like cover versions, and obviously I like those songs. And then there's some new original music by a female artist named Roxy Gunn, which I assume is her given name. And the songs were fine. They were catchy, but it was just after a while. It was like, really? We're going to show a fourth performance of a song? Let's write a story. Most of the story takes place in the middle section when Tom Cody is punching women in the face repeatedly.
Do you think Roxy Gunn at some point went, this is my Purple Rain?
Definitely. It's more her Under the Cherry Moon.
Oh, no!
I've seen a bunch of stuff. I won't talk about it all. I guess... The only other movie I'll talk about, so we can get into Oz the Great and Powerful, is I saw Pitch Perfect, finally. Did you see Pitch Perfect?
That's the a cappella movie.
Yes.
Okay. I always keep messing that up with Picture Perfect.
Which is Jennifer Aniston and Jay Moore, right?
Yeah, and the bacon.
Yeah, that movie's not very good.
How's Picture Perfect?
Picture Perfect was fine. Like, here's the thing. I saw trailers for it last fall, I think it came out, and the trailers really annoyed me. Like, they're trying to make all this slang catch on where they say, like, aka in front of everything, and they say, like, pitch slapped, and, like, they call your musical boner a toner. Like, it's very up its own ass with cleverness. And then just a lot of the singing, it all irritated me from the trailer, and I thought, I won't go see that movie, it will just upset me. And then all these reviews came out, and all these people saw it, and they're like, no, it's not what you think, it's actually really smart and good. And so I watched it, and it's pretty much the movie I thought it was going to be. It's fine, performances are good, it's definitely watchable, has a lot of energy, you know, the music is fine, Anna Kendrick is capable of making things better than they should be, I think. But it definitely irritated me in all the ways I thought it would. That's not the movie. That's me. I'm just not the right fit for it. It reminded me a ton of Bring It On.
I was just about to ask you if it was better or worse than Bring It On.
It's kind of the same in the way that it, like, it kind of tries to have it both ways, where it, like, wants to sort of goof on this thing, but also convince you it's super awesome.
Yeah.
And invent its own language and, like, create this subculture that maybe exists. Like, it is to a cappella singing as Bring It On is to cheerleading.
Okay. Well, I think I'll pass.
You might be able to, unless you're a big Anna Kendrick fan.
I do like her. She was in
Twilight. Go ahead, say
Watch
it. Oh.
And Twilight.
I still haven't seen End of Watch.
It's good. I put it in my top 10 for last year.
Yeah.
And after watching it a second time, I don't know if I would keep it in there.
Okay.
But it's still really good. And, yeah, she's got just a small role in it. It's kind of a thankless part. But like you said, she somehow can kind of take a minor character and give it a little bit more weight than you would think. So, and I think a lot of her part kind of makes you sympathize more with Gyllenhaal's character.
Okay.
So, yeah, she's an MVP a little bit.
She is, and she makes, you know, Pitch Perfect work more than it should, because Rebel Wilson is in it. Are you familiar with Rebel Wilson?
Not a fan of the Rebel Wilson.
I mean, the jig is up on Rebel Wilson, right?
No, because she's British.
She's got the one thing, and then we're just supposed to laugh every time she does the one thing. I don't know.
Yeah. Has she been on SNL yet?
Not yet.
Then she's not done. She's hosting the MTV Movie Awards, which Patrick just said we're live tweeting.
Is she really hosting them?
Yeah.
Oh,
street
good.
Good. How come there's no conversation about, like, the racism of MTV Movie Awards?
What do you mean?
Like, Twilight New Moon Part 2 was snubbed. Is it New Moon Part 2?
It's Breaking Dawn. Yeah.
Oh, damn. That's why we're not having the conversation.
And that's racist because...
Did I say it's racist?
Yeah.
Oops. I didn't even mean... That was a slip. I didn't even mean to say it was racist.
Just casual accusation.
I'm like hyper-attuned to racism in 2013. You're welcome, Mark. All right,
let's talk about the super racist movie that is Oz the Great and Powerful.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so, okay. If you listen to my favorite movies show, which we did over a year ago, you know that Wizard of Oz is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's really, like, for me, the sort of launching point of so many things that I love in movies, whether it's horror movies or just fantasy or musical numbers in things that aren't musicals, even though Wizard of Oz is a musical. It's really the first, like, genre movie that I really fell in love with. And so it will always hold a special place in my heart. I started seeing trailers for Oz the Great and Powerful. Nothing about it interested me. Adam and I talked about it, and we both kind of said, like, yeah, we only really want to see this because it's the new Sam Raimi movie. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to see it. I thought it looked a lot like Alice in Wonderland from a few years ago, which I'm not a fan of. Then, like, in the week leading up to the release of Oz the Great and Powerful, P.S., we're going to talk spoiler-free for a long time, and then at a certain point we'll say, okay, spoilers for Oz the Great and Powerful, and then you can listen, or if you've seen it. I just wanted to get that clear because I don't want to...
You'll only be able to hear the spoiler section if you've seen it.
That's right.
It's like Polar Express where you can't hear the bell if you're Jewish.
I was going to go with a dog whistle, but that's a thing in Polar Express.
Yeah, I had a joke when I saw Polar Express. I'm Jewish. I outed myself as
spoilers,
Jewish.
Guys, spoilers, guys.
I'm Jewish. I saw it with some of my Christian friends. All right. And there's a part at the end where one of my buddies was talking about the sleigh bells ringing and the sound of it, and he was saying how, like, good the sound in the theater was because of about the sleigh bells, and I did this whole long gag where I'm like, I didn't hear any sleigh bells, and then he's like, what are you talking about? And then, like, one of my buddies knew what I was doing, but then, like, this guy had no idea, and for, like, a month, I didn't tell him that the joke was because I'm Jewish, I don't hear Christmas. I don't hear the joys and chimes of Christmas. What were we talking about?
I don't know. No, the week leading up to the release of Oz the Great and Powerful, all of a sudden I started to get kind of excited about it. I don't know why. I was like, maybe this is going to be better than I thought. I saw the movie, And, gosh. Adam, what did you think of Oz the Great and Powerful?
Well, let's go back to the whole Raimi thing.
Yes.
Because I hate Alice in Wonderland. I think it's just a completely lazy...
It's like not a movie, right?
It's a lazily offensive movie.
Yeah.
It's just... It's a lot of stuff happening to no avail. And
yeah.
I was only interested in Oz because of Raimi.
Right.
And I think this might be one of his worst movies.
Maybe.
Because
I put it above For Love of the Game.
I have not seen For Love of the Game... Or The Gift.
I kind of like The Gift. It's not great, but...
I would rather watch Spider-Man 3 again than watch
Oz.
Oh,
I forgot about Spider-Man 3. I don't know.
Spider-Man 3's got a lot of problems, but it's more entertaining, I thought, than Oz was.
I did not hate Oz the Great and Powerful.
And actually, I didn't hate it either.
For, like, the first 10 minutes, I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be secretly good.
It was charming.
Because the first 10 minutes are a Sam Raimi movie.
Yep.
Like, in a big way.
Yep.
And then they go to Oz... And then it becomes sort of a CGI demo reel.
It was a lot of Star Wars Episode 2, Episode 3 backgrounds. And one thing that kind of reminded me of was it felt like Hook a little bit.
Interesting.
Meaning that it was just a lot of... They gave so much attention to the sets
yeah.
and backgrounds
yeah.
that they forgot to put a movie in there.
Yeah.
And at least Hook was... tangible. And this was just, yeah, background noise.
Well, let's,
CGI background noise.
Let's kind of talk about that because,
yeah.
You know, the story is now that the movie cost, I think, over $200 million. And as much as I'm sort of interested to see what a director like Sam Raimi does on that kind of scale, we kind of saw that with the Spider-Man movies.
Yeah.
It's very pretty at times. Other times, it's just, it feels so... artificial, like you said, you know that you're just looking at pixels that you don't respond to the beauty. It's super colorful and like saturated and bright, and maybe it was just the digital screening that we saw. More than once, I literally like squinted and winced. The image was so bright.
Yeah.
I've never had that in a movie ever where I had to like squint because I couldn't take it. I feel like, and we can get to the actors in a second, but most of them, I feel, were miscast. And here's one of the problems I had with the movie, that there are long stretches where it feels like either Sam Raimi or some Disney executives said, like, this needs to be more of a ride. And so there's long sections where characters just run around and fall down slides and whoa, like that. And it feels kind of like a ride. And it's just this special effects demo reel. But there's a weird thing going on where I feel like pretty much all of the actors, with the exception of maybe Rachel Weisz, are swallowed up by the fake backgrounds.
I am on the same page almost completely as you. The only place where I kind of waver off is when you. It's funny that you mentioned the roller coaster, the ride thing, because I was thinking that it was more like have you been to say the Jurassic Park ride at Universal Studios?
Yes,
and the ride itself is not that great.
Right.
But it's residing on a lot of residual love that you have for the movie. And that's almost what I felt like Oz was to The Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
Where it's like, I'm liking, whatever I'm liking in this movie
yeah.
is because the material it's based on is so good.
Yeah.
That I'm getting some enjoyment out of it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I was getting. It's weird though, because I didn't get the feel of the, you know, we're going on slides and we're running around thing. I did think it was weird, though, when he gets to Oz. I mean, he's built up to be this traveling magician. I almost said musician. This traveling magician. And I get that he is kind of, you know, will take in towns when he's traveling and everything like that. But don't you think when he sees a flying monkey, he would be surprised by it? I mean, like, I know he's a carnival guy,
yeah.
but there's nothing that, like, really kind of throws him off.
No. No, there's not.
I don't know if that would be to the movie's benefit if it did, but...
Well, and I was thinking about, yeah. like, his trip into Oz, And we saw the movie in 2D, and there's long sections where I feel like, okay, this exists just for 3D, like the slides and a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of it, I'm sure, is really cool in 3D. I could tell that Sam Raimi seemed to be having some fun with certain 3D aspects, especially like even the opening titles, you could tell, were designed for 3D. The twister comes, and Oz, played by James Franco, is swept up in a tornado while trying to escape in a hot air balloon. And here's the difference between, like, The Wizard of Oz and Oz the Great and Powerful. Is The Wizard of Oz, Dorothy gets swept up in the tornado. She looks out the window. She sees Miss Gulch. We get to see a little bit of it, right? And then it kind of blacks out. And she wakes up and she's in Oz. Mm-hmm. This movie has to go through the whole experience. Like, it takes a really long time.
Yep.
And then when he's in Oz, again, it's a lot of walking around to show off these backgrounds. And it just, it seems to me like the actors just didn't know how to interact with the nothing that they were working with, that they were clearly on in front of a green screen on a stage, and they're not convincingly in this environment. And that sounds like a really stupid criticism, I know, but it pulled me out of the movie a lot of times. And it made me think of Avatar, not to once again bring up Avatar, but Avatar takes a lot of shit. But to Avatar's credit, those actors always felt like they were in the place that they were supposed to be in, even though they too were in a CGI environment.
Yeah.
And in this movie, I never felt like they were really there.
No, it doesn't feel like a real place. The thing that's kind of weird is, I think that James Franco, just to use him as an example, he has more chemistry with the special effects characters than he does with the human actors that he's working with in the movie. The only time I felt any type of emotion, not other than just kind of boredom, was when he was talking to, like, the China girl.
Yeah.
Which is a great special effect.
It's amazing.
I think that is, if I was making, like, a top 10 list of special effects unto themselves for the year, that would probably be up there.
It does not look like CG at all. Yeah.
No, I mean, like, very rarely am I kind of awed by any special effect.
Yeah.
And that one really was special. And then the monkey was kind of fine, but I think a lot of it had to do with the setup to that character, because I think, going back to what you were saying about the first 10 minutes, the first 10 minutes are really charming, I thought. And I thought that the setup with the relationship between Zach Braff is Oz's assistant, and he's set up, and you could see him as Zach Braff at the beginning of the movie, and then in Oz, he's, you know, a flying ape, and I think that relationship is kind of informed by the first 10 minutes of the movie, and you get something out of it. But, like, Franco with Mila Kunis, and with Rachel Weisz, and with Michelle Williams, especially for the themes that they're trying to force into this movie, which is, I saw it as, you know, it's all about being a good person, and it doesn't matter how great you are at what you do. It's really more important that you're just good, which is kind of a simple, stupid theme, but that's kind of what it was. None of that was informed or came across in the interactions that they were having.
Right.
So, what do you think of James Franco in the movie?
I liked James Franco in the first 10 minutes because I felt like he really kind of established a character. Part of the problem, I think, with James Franco, I go back and forth on him. I think he's a really good character actor. I'm not sure he's a leading man.
Have you seen Annapolis?
I have not seen Annapolis.
That will not change your
from
mind.
The director of Fast Five. So I had a hard time, and I know Robert Downey Jr. was originally cast in the part, and I know you are not a big Robert Downey Jr. fan, but I think it might have worked better. I don't know. Robert Downey Jr. to me is such a larger-than-life presence, especially in that mode.
Mm-hmm.
It gets annoying where he's winking at the camera and, aren't I cute? Aren't I a little shit? You know, and we're supposed to love him anyway, but that's kind of Oz, you know? And so I feel like he would have really kind of knocked it out of the park. Franco works at times, but
I think he works as the womanizer part of Oz. He seems like I like that aspect of it where he was kind of, you know, this cad, this, like, womanizer, this bad guy. And I thought, honestly, like, when he was helping, like, the China doll and stuff, yeah. I thought it was setting up him learning how to act with women, almost.
Sure.
And it doesn't go anywhere.
No, well, that, a lot of the stuff in the movie doesn't yeah. necessarily go anywhere. Like, even the womanizer aspect, like you said, is set up early on, maybe the first third of the movie, and then kind of dropped, yeah. even though a lot of this movie is secretly about that.
Yeah.
In, like, almost a disturbing way.
How do you mean?
Well, I can't quite get into it until we get to spoilers.
Okay.
But, right. you know, to me, the movie in some ways is sort of about, like, you are what you pretend to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was interesting, and I kind of liked that they follow through on some of that. Again, maybe we could talk about that more in spoilers. But I just feel like there's not enough of a story that the idea was, well, let's just go back to Oz and throw a lot of money on the screen. But in terms of the story that's being told, I don't know.
Can I climb into Sam Raimi's brain real quick?
Please do.
I think that he said that I've read that The Wizard of Oz is his favorite movie.
Okay.
That's daunting. I mean, like, if yeah. you were to tackle, like, a prequel or another story in that series, for anything, I mean, like, your favorite movie is Back to the Future. If somebody said, hey, Patrick, why don't you write a treatment for a Back to the Future movie, you would probably be paralyzed. I mean,
I would, but you know yeah. what my response would be? No.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that thing yeah. should exist.
Right, right. But also, I think Sam Raimi, when he was making this, and I can be completely wrong, and I have no way of knowing this, I think he realized he actually already made The Wizard of Oz. Because if you think about it, Army of Darkness is very similar to The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
I mean, to a striking degree, if you think about it, because you got a guy dropping out of the sky into a world where everybody kind of puts upon him that he's the chosen one, and right. he needs
to help us.
And you have to help us. He's teaching the villagers how to do things in order to manage their struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of things like that. And then there's a lot of stuff where he's almost just kind of shoehorning in style just for the sake of it. Like, there's some weird angles right. that are very Raimi-esque. And then there's witches that look straight out of Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like he maybe just kind of knew that it, you know, his heart wasn't in it because he's already made this movie, but it was such a big opportunity.
Right.
That how do you turn that down?
And if he loves The Wizard of Oz, maybe he was just like, hey, what a great opportunity to make a movie in Oz, basically.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, one of the problems with the movie, I think, is that it's just over 2 hours and Army of Darkness runs under 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And they have the same amount of story, roughly. So this movie feels really padded. And again, mm-hmm. It didn't help that, like, we saw it at, you know, not super late, but I was really tired, and the movie tested my patience during some of the longer
yeah.
walking around stretches.
I was having a good time with it for about the first hour,
yeah.
but I wanted to leave so bad at about 90 minutes, and then it was another 35 minutes or so, and
right.
I was, like, sitting up, but not because I was interested.
Right.
I was, like, laying on my side almost. Luckily, trying the theater was kind of open.
Yeah,
so I
trying to fight
that.
Through and, like,
it was rough.
Make it to the end.
Can we talk about, all right, you mentioned some of the other actors are miscast.
Yeah.
I think Mila Kunis is crazy miscast.
I do too, and we'll talk about that a little bit more when we get into spoilers.
Okay.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
There's part of it maybe is my baggage, because as I get older, all of the movie stars are younger than me now. And for a lot of my life, movie stars were always older than me. And now they're all younger. And it's very difficult for me to look at Mila Kunis as anything other than, like, you're a kid. You're very small. You're perpetually 22.
Yeah.
And in some movies, that's fine. In, like, Black Swan, sure. But she's fine in that movie. It was a little ridiculous when she started getting nominated for awards, but whatever. In the Timberlake movie,
Friends with Benefits.
Yes, it's fine. You mm-hmm. know, like, I can totally buy her in that.
Yeah.
It's very strange when Oz shows up in Oz, and the first person he runs into is Mila Kunis, who, again, seems like this kid, totally either bored or not sure what to do, totally disconnected from the material. Even her costume makes no sense.
Yeah.
She's a witch. She's wearing Kate Winslet's hat from Titanic and leather pants. There's some weird costuming things going on in this movie.
Yeah.
Where the leather pants feel very contemporary. Was it just so that guys could get a good look at Mila Kunis's butt? I don't know.
In 3D!
Yeah. I think, I hate to say it, I think she's really bad in the movie.
Yeah, I think so too. She definitely has... It's Meg Griffin. And I'll stop there until spoilers, but it's Meg Griffin.
Yeah.
And it's really distracting.
Yeah. And Michelle Williams, you know, I think she's kind of trying, and she stylizes her performance in a way that not everybody does, but maybe it's either because I'm used to seeing her in certain, like, indie movies, or because that's what she's used to working in, that she doesn't know how to act. It's a different skill set to act in a movie on this kind of a scale, and I think she is out of place.
Yeah, she's an actress, not like a fun actress. She's a very capital actress.
And right.
I mean, like, I made a joke to you beforehand where it was just like, I'm just relieved that she's not going to be having like an abortion or like breaking up somebody's marriage or like something horrible.
Right.
Like she falls down a flight of stairs. Actually, she does fall down a flight of stairs. That's what we have. I forgot about that. But you got Rachel Weisz, who has won an Academy Award. Not that that's, like, the sign of quality, but, like, you've got her, and you've got Michelle Williams, who's known from a lot of people as being one of the better actresses around there. And you've got them doing nothing but a toucan, like, street fightering at each other at the last 20 minutes. And, Gene Siskel's got, like, a famous quote of, is this movie better than a documentary of the same people having lunch together?
Right.
And that's exactly what was going through my mind during this movie. It would be so much more interesting to have, like, remember that show on IFC, like, Dinner for Five?
Yeah. I like that.
Why don't we get James Franco, Mila Kunis, Rachel Weisz, Michelle Williams, and Sam Raimi sitting in a room and talking about The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah.
I would rather watch that than watch Oz the Great and Powerful.
I think I would, too. I think you're absolutely right. It's weird because, again, these are all talented people, and in the right roles can be really good, and they all just feel out of place.
Yeah.
The movie, you know, would come alive every once in a while. There would be a real Sam Raimi moment. There's a lot of little nods to The Wizard of Oz, and I never felt like it was being super obnoxious. Like, sometimes I really hate that when a movie, a lot of times they'll do it with, like, a remake, where they keep acknowledging the other one, and you're like, well, stop that, because you're just reminding me of the better thing. But there's a lot of, you know, we see some scarecrows show up, and there's these guys, they're called tinkerers, I think.
Yeah, they're like repairmen.
Right, and I kind of got the impression that, like, these are the guys who eventually will build the Tin Woodsman, but that's never explicitly stated.
Mm-hmm.
There's a reference to the Gales early on, which is Dorothy's family.
There's the tailors, the soldiers, the spies.
Yeah, some are directly, you know, right out of I didn't see where you were going with that, but now I do, and I'm bored just thinking of them.
You're welcome.
The soldiers, I was thinking, those are directly out of Wizard of Oz, you know, and Bruce Campbell shows up as one of those, because it's a Sam Raimi movie, and so every once in a while, when he would be able to cut loose, the movie would kind of come alive, and I could tell, you know, that there's affection in the movie, and so it's impossible for me to really hate, but at the same time, it's not great.
No, I didn't, I was kind of on the defensive with this movie to begin with, to be honest, because outside of Harry Potter, I am very reticent to giving myself over to fantasy movies, especially the Chosen One fantasy movies, because I can't stand that there's a town full of people, and none of them can take up their cause. They have to wait for some dude to show up,
fall out of the sky,
and help them slay some Minotaur, or whatever.
Right.
That's Narnia. But I mean, like, it's just like, you have to bestow this greatness on somebody
right.
that doesn't deserve it, and then that's their journey, is that they have to, like, earn it, but it's not even their fight.
Right.
It's really odd, and I think it's kind of strange that so many movies that are, like, the big movies of this era are centered around it.
Well, and we're totally being inundated with them now. Yeah. Even the trailers before Oz the Great and Powerful, I feel like there were two or three that were like, okay, another sort of fantasy sci-fi movie that's exactly what you're describing that will no doubt culminate in a giant battle, as this movie does.
Yeah, I thought it was going to...
Over the battle.
Yeah, I mean, like, we'll wait till spoilers, but I thought for a second they were going to avoid it,
yeah.
and then they did not no. avoid it at all.
The novelty that, you know, Oz the Great and Powerful adds, I think, is that unlike Harry Potter or whatever, The Matrix, obviously not, or even Twilight, or is that... You know, everyone anoints him the chosen one, but the joke is he's a con artist and he's mm-hmm. not the chosen one,
yeah.
which is Army of Darkness, you mm-hmm. know, that he has to pretend to be this thing. And, well, I don't want to spoil anything, so I won't say. But I thought that was an interesting twist. Unfortunately, the movie ends up almost shoehorning in just the traditional arc of that character
yeah.
without doing something a little bit... different with it. I don't know.
I thought the dialogue too was basically of completely no interest whatsoever, yeah, and no
it was
quirk.
Just functional mostly.
Well, that's and just drawing upon the Wizard of Oz. It's the type of movie that needs songs, like
yeah.
because a lot of it has to do with emotion that
yeah.
they're not displaying at all through
right.
the dialogue. And if they just had songs to do that with, I think it would make it a better movie.
And I wonder, I mean, I would love to see Sam Raimi
yeah.
direct a musical, you know, and I feel
yeah.
like songs would have filled in some of these dead spaces where characters are just mm-hmm. walking from place to place.
Yeah.
I wonder if they avoided it because it then would have been too much like Wicked,
mm-hmm.
which is clearly like one of the reasons this movie exists in
yeah.
the first place, is like maybe yeah. somebody was going to make a movie out of Wicked and then they decided to do this instead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it suffers from some of the same problems as all prequels, which is it's answering questions that I don't need answered. I don't need to know where certain things come from.
Yeah.
And I guess with that, we should move into spoilers. Not a terrible movie, but certainly a frustrating one, especially from Sam Raimi.
Yeah, it's not worth watching.
For you, better or worse than Snow White and the Huntsman? I know this because you're not a fan of Snow White.
I'm not the biggest fan of Snow White and the Huntsman. Let's call it a draw.
right.
I can't make up my mind.
Sure.
Another
movie that ends with a giant battle and a chosen one.
Yeah, there's more egregiously frustrating to me about Snow White and the Huntsman.
Okay.
Mainly because everything that the character of Snow White is about is not Kristen Stewart.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, back on November whatever, when we voted for a president, I also voted for Lily Collins as my Snow White.
Interesting.
So I'm okay with that. I haven't even seen
I was
going to
say, are you a Mirror Mirror fan?
I have not
it's
even
on
seen...
Netflix, you know.
Ooh.
I watched 10 minutes of it, and I was like, I'm going to come back to this.
I'll watch anything.
I had to bail on Mirror Mirror.
Yeah, I think that it's... I got no opinion on it. It's better or worse than Snow White and the Huntsman.
Okay, so spoilers coming up for Oz the Great and Powerful, if you have not yet seen it, or if you have no desire to see it. I had that. If you have not seen it, tune out. If you have no desire to see it, I guess you can keep listening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
yep.
Go ahead.
But, okay. One of the things, all right, Mila Kunis is the Wicked Witch of the West. Is that it?
Yeah.
The West. Okay.
Yeah.
Did she borrow the mask from Jim Carrey's The Mask?
I know just a little
all
bit
I
of,
could think.
A little bit of background information,
yeah.
and that was designed by Greg Nicotero and Howard Berger.
Mm-hmm.
They had to be different enough so as not to infringe on the MGM copyright.
I've heard this.
So
yeah.
they were, like, messing with shades of green and different kinds of
yeah.
makeup, and that's what they landed on.
That's not a task that I would want, and I'm sure
no.
it was difficult for them to kind of find something to work with. But it looks, all it reminded me of was the mask.
Somebody stop me.
And then when she's shooting fire, she's like, smoke it!
all right, so this is a great place to start with Mila Kunis. Because for some reason, it's kind of a secret that even her character turns into the Wicked Witch.
Although she's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly dressed as the Wicked Witch.
But they, inside the article, they say, like, we're not going to spoil who it is. But if you spend 2 seconds looking at that picture, it's like, that's Mila Kunis.
Yep.
The eyes give it away. again, part of the problem is in the casting, because Mila Kunis is not Margaret Hamilton. In any universe. And I haven't even seen Margaret Hamilton in anything but maybe one other movie. So I'm not saying Margaret Hamilton is the greatest actress of her generation. I'm just saying she is so tied to that role and she's so good in that role. And Mila Kunis, again, feels like a kid.
Yeah.
And the movie, apparently, it seems like its reason for being is to explain how the Wicked Witch became the Wicked Witch.
It's very Anakin Skywalker right? becoming Darth Vader.
What difference does it make?
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And, yeah, when I mentioned the Meg Griffin thing, that's because there's scenes, like, at the end, the climax of the movie, the big battle, she's basically just standing there on her broom flying around yelling at people, and she sounds like a kid having a tantrum.
Every time
and, like,
she
no
does,
one's listening to
her. Right, and again, Margaret Hamilton does that cackle that every kid remembers for his or her whole life, and when Mila Kunis does it, it's just jarring. It's like, oh, right, you have to do the cackle, but it sounds nothing like the voice you've created. You know, I haven't seen the show Wicked. I know Wicked sort of does an origin story.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I believe Wicked starts out with this green-skinned witch who turns evil over a certain period of time for one reason or another. This movie goes another way. She starts out as Mila Kunis and then becomes this green-skinned witch because James Franco dumps her.
And he doesn't even really dump her because they know each other for about one day, according to the logic of this movie.
And she wants to marry him, and she says everything in that same flat voice, like, I will be your queen. I don't know.
Also, her transition to evil is so out of nowhere in the movie that it's really it's annoying because there needs to be a scene in there of James Franco just being, like, a total douchebag to her. Because he never is. He's just, like, he's, you know, trying to put the moves on her. He sleeps with her, supposedly. And then, like, he leaves. But he doesn't, like, do anything directly at her.
Right, but she sees him with Glinda and assumes something is going on.
Yeah.
And then becomes the Wicked Witch.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing that I question is, if that is enough for her to be like, make the pain go away and stuff, and she's crying and the cries, because it's water and because it has to tie back to the Wizard of Oz, they turn into scars and shit. Like, she should have been like a witch from skinning her knee when she was 3. Like, there's no way.
Nothing bad has ever happened to her.
Nothing bad before this has ever happened to her, and this is just so big.
Right? And again, we don't need to know why the Wicked Witch became the Wicked Witch, but if you are going to tell us, it probably should be more than just, like, a guy was mean to me, and that's where I feel like certain subtext of the movie is really uncomfortable, because you had said, you know, that the movie is sort of about, not misogyny, but it should have been more about him being a womanizer, and it's not in terms of its plot, and yet apparently, Oz being kind of a womanizing douche is what gives way to the Wizard of Oz, like the movie. Like,
I never thought of that.
The Wicked Witch is the Wicked Witch because this guy was mean to her. It's just, it's weird in the way that it presents a lot of women who exist almost only in their relationship to a man and who are defined by the way they are treated by a man. I don't know, for a kids movie from Disney, I feel like they should know better.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I never thought of that misogyny angle, but it's very strange what they're doing with women's roles.
And here's something really weird about, and tell me if this is just me. I mentioned Mila Kunis's leather pants earlier, right? who is this movie for? Because somebody, no doubt, in the comments who saw the movie and who liked it more than us will point out, you guys are being kind of assholes. This is a kid's movie. And a lot of times it is. Yeah. I thought of it earlier when you were talking about some of the dialogue, because Doug and I were talking a little bit, and he saw a trailer, and he was like, what's the line with the monkey and the bananas? Why is that supposed to be funny? Mm-hmm. Where he's like, just because I'm a monkey, you think I like bananas? And I said, oh, well, because kids will laugh at that. And I remembered, oh, right, this is kind of a kid's movie. Mm-hmm. But, A, it's depressing, because when The Wizard of Oz was made, The Wizard of Oz was made for audiences. That was the idea. Like, we're going to make something that audiences will love. It's just this generic concept. Mm-hmm. But now here we are in 2013, where marketing has taken over Hollywood, and now movies are made not for audiences, but for these quadrants. This will work for this group, and this will work for this group. And so we got to have the monkey joke for the kids. But grown-ups are going to be taking their kids, too. And Mila Kunis is hot. So even when she becomes the Wicked Witch, what if she wears a really low-cut dress and has green cleavage showing all the time?
Yeah.
And I found it really odd, because again, you go back to Margaret Hamilton as the Wicked Witch, she was not sexualized in any way. She was covered up. She was just a witch. She's this iconic character. And here we have the new Wicked Witch, who's like kind of showing her boobs a lot. Who is this movie for?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the four quadrant movie that they're shooting for. They want under over 25. They want men, women. They want couples. They want kids. They want the people who liked Wizard of Oz and now are like 157 years old. They want the people who are seeing this as their first movie. So it's like a little bit of everything, but for no one.
That's the thing, is that in trying to please everyone, it's this weird fragmented thing where, like, at times it's this kids movie, at times it's a Sam Raimi movie, at times it's a movie about Mila Kunis's body, and it's very kind of disjointed, unfortunately. It feels a little bit more like a product than I had hoped a Sam Raimi movie would.
Yeah, it definitely has the feel of this is something that exists in the 1 week it's out in theaters and exists in the 1 week it's on sale on Blu-ray, and that's all that it needs
to be. But they're clearly, I think, trying to start a franchise. I mean, that's all Disney's interested in these days.
All right, because that's going to tie into the ending.
Yeah.
All right, I want to just say, fucking screw this ending. This ending is, I got so many gripes about this freaking ending of this movie. All right. They're doing a thing at the end where it's, they've got the Tinker, the Herald, the China Doll, and the monkey, Farley the monkey.
Okay.
And
your memory is so much better than mine.
I Wikipedia'd this. All right. And then they're clearly supposed to be, you know, the Tin Man, the Lion, the Scarecrow. And, like, you know, you got brains, you got heart, you got courage, you got in the Wizard of Oz. In this one, James Franco gives the Tinker a fucking Swiss Army knife, because what does that mean? And then he gives the Herald, who he's been calling the wrong name the entire movie, a mask with a smiley face on it. Like, here you go, you fucking asshole. I'm still going to call you by the wrong name, but now you should smile about it, you little jerk. There's that. He gives the China Doll, he's like, hey, it's a group of friends. It's just like your new family. It's like, but guess what? That's not her family.
And it's her family was wiped out.
Yeah, her family was wiped out. At least she got her legs back. That was a cool thing that James Franco did earlier. Yeah. And then he gives, whatchamacallit? The monkey. He's just like, hey, guess what? I give you a lot of shit, but you're my friend. And it's just like, what is this? And then,
but also, still my slave.
Yeah, still my slave. And then, because he took a life debt. The only life debt is with Morgan Freeman and Kevin Costner and Robin Hood for nothing. That's the only one. That's the only one that should exist and will exist in my eyes.
Doesn't he keep calling him Strange One in that movie?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that movie is really good. I think that's what I was about to say.
That's a movie I'm afraid to go back to.
Oh yeah, you should try it.
Okay. And then this is my favorite part, because in the Wikipedia summary it says, and then he gives Glinda an unspecified romantic relationship.
What? What does that mean?
I don't know. It could be a booty call. It could be love. It's an unspecified romantic relationship.
How weird.
So, all right. Heart, courage, brains. Swiss Army knife.
Fake smile. This
fake smile. Fuck you, friendship. And take it or leave it. These are your family now. So, that's one
thing. That's where we've come.
It's where we've come, because 2013, where everything is better. And then also, is Oz a real place, or is it a metaphor?
Okay, I wanted to talk to you about this, because this was part of my problem. I have not, and here's where, again, people are already commenting, like, you dumbasses, this is based on a series of books, not on The Wizard of Oz. Okay, great. That could be true. I've never read any of the L. Frank Baum books.
I exist in movies, so fuck books.
Right, thank
you. That's how I see it.
I know they exist. I know sometimes movies claim to be based on them, and that's as far as I go. Because as soon as I saw the trailer for this movie, I was very confused. Because, like, Oz goes to Oz, and here's how Oz becomes Oz. And my first thought was, but I thought it was all a dream. I don't know. Yeah. Oz isn't a real place, right?
It's all in Dorothy's head.
Right. Okay. So let's say that Wizard of Oz invented that. The movie version invented that, which it did.
Okay.
The books claim it's a real place. Okay, fine. However, even Oz the Great and Powerful goes to great lengths to suggest that none of this may be real, because it sets up all these different characters and relationships in those first good 10 minutes that then pay off in real life. So we get Zach Braff the assistant becomes Zach Braff the flying monkey, and we get little girl in a wheelchair, Joey King, becomes Joey King voice of China Doll, whose legs are broken, that Franco's finally able to fix. Mm-hmm. And we get Michelle Williams, the ex-girlfriend, who's going to go marry the Gale, and then
that's
we get,
Dorothy's dad, presumably, right?
Right, I assume so. And then we get Michelle Williams as Glinda, who Franco is immediately attracted to because she reminds him of the girl that he loves. So all of these elements of quote unquote real life are bleeding into Oz. So is it real or is it not?
Yeah, that's the thing, because all right. At the end of the movie, the people of Oz don't think that he exists as a man. He exists as this spirit.
Right. He fakes his own death.
He fakes his own death, so he's a spirit to them.
Right.
So does that mean that he has to stay in a fucking tower and be the good guy that he learned to be, which I don't even know if he really believes that he's a good guy.
Right.
So he has to stay up in a tower by himself as opposed and
behind a curtain.
Behind a curtain. It's like, what kind of life is that?
Right.
It's stupid.
And let's extrapolate even further. Correct me if I'm wrong. In The Wizard of Oz, it's Oz that sort of tasks Dorothy with killing the Wicked Witch, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now what Oz the Great and Powerful teaches us is that the Wicked Witch became the Wicked Witch because Oz was a douche to her. And so now, years later, he's like, hey, can you go kill this woman I fucked over? Mm-hmm. We banged one time, and she's not over it. Please go kill her, Dorothy, and
it's
I'll
cool.
send you
it's
home.
It's cool. I know your mom. I know your mom.
Right?
It's cool.
It's very...
Don't tell your mom, but I know your mom. It's all right.
It's very strange.
Like, I knew that for the plot mechanics to work, he had to stay in Oz, but, like, I thought that they were going to go back.
Yeah.
And he learned his lesson to be a good man, and now he can, like, kind of be that good man to Michelle Williams in Black and White, but that wouldn't make any sense. Like, the puzzle pieces wouldn't fit.
Right.
But where it sits in the movie, it's like, it's like I went on this journey to exist in a girl's dream.
Right.
It's like, and now we're in Inception world. So, like, at the end of the movie, instead of him kissing Michelle Williams... And then they
for an unspecified romantic relationship.
For an unspecified romantic relationship, he should have spinned the top so we can find out if he's dreaming or if he's not.
To the movie's credit, I kind of like that the way that the problem is resolved or whatever is through sort of trickery. And I like that it sets him up as this magician early on and that's what makes him win in the end is that he, you know, comes up with these different tricks and stuff. It doesn't suggest, like, oh no, you do have great powers. Because so many of the movies that you're talking about where it's like, you're the one, it's all about that person figuring out, like, you're right, I am awesome, I can do these things. Mm-hmm. And this movie never does that. Instead, it says, but you can fake it. And he does, and that's kind of neat. And Michelle Williams is the one who sort of knows that about him all along, which I guess is what gives their relationship more weight.
Yeah, I don't know.
But Rachel Weisz, who again, I think maybe gives the best performance in the movie, but maybe not. Maybe I just like her. Her character is completely extraneous. Like, what is her function?
So they can drop a house on her later.
Right. That's we have to set up that the Wicked Witch has a sister.
Yeah, it's...
Thank God they never, like, put striped tights on her. I kept waiting for the striped tights.
And I think they probably wanted to, but she said in the Entertainment Weekly article where she's like, I'm much more of a leather girl. That's how she talks. And then, I think so. That's probably the only reason. They're probably like, hey, Rachel, you want to try these on? She's like, never! She, like, ran back to her trailer. Yeah. But, so I don't know. All right. I've thought about it.
Okay.
I like Oz the Great and Powerful better than Snow White and the Huntsman.
You do?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm disappointing.
Sorry.
It's okay. I feel like, and I don't want to turn this into a Snow White and the Huntsman podcast. I feel like Snow White and the Huntsman has a lot of things to say about women's roles in terms of the way that they're defined by men, that it's very pro-woman, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like Oz the Great and Powerful is the opposite. So I just feel like on a textual level, Snow White and the Huntsman is better. But I also understand that it's also like, it goes more for like, everything has to be covered in dirt because this is the real fairy tale, and Oz the Great and Powerful is very colorful and beautiful and much more stylized. And
dirt
so,
wins you a Best Makeup Oscar.
It sure will. A Best Makeup nomination.
I thought Les Mis won.
It did, yes. You're right. Well, Snow White and the Huntsman was nominated because I voted for it in every category because I was going for a Snow White and the Huntsman sweep.
Could have happened.
And I got shut out.
Oh.
But you're absolutely right. Les Mis did win for the best dirty faces.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
All right, so Oz the Great and Powerful better than Snow White. Disappointing.
More like Blas the Groan and ugh.
In some ways, it was better than I expected. Like, here's the thing. Before the week leading up to the movie, it actually would have been way better than I expected it to be. Because I had zero expectations, and there were, like, a few things that I liked and moments that I was like, hey, this isn't bad. But then, for some reason, I got kind of excited, and then it became a disappointment.
I mean, it was not Alice in Wonderland.
No, so definitely not.
So that, to its credit, it wasn't that. And it had some interesting things going on, especially in the first hour, I thought was fine. Yeah. I think I stuck with it maybe longer than you did.
Maybe. Because honestly, as soon as he and Mila Kunis were, like, running around Oz, I was done. I was like, well, you don't have a movie here.
Yeah. Yeah, but the death march that is the 2013 movie year continues.
Yikes.
It's bad.
Yeah.
It's real bad. You know how we were talking about how good 2012 was?
Yes.
It's 2 years worth of good movies, and now we're getting the rest.
I guess. What's the next thing to look forward to?
Burt Wonderstone?
I disagree.
Gerard Hart. Gerard Hart. Olympus Has Fallen. It's just Die Hard with Gerard Butler, so I am calling it Gerard Hart.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Patrick.
We'll see you guys next week.
Ta-da!